Usually before an interview, it's let me finish my coffee.
But yeah.
You sound like Chilean miners who just got rescued.
Jason Rouse is hanging out in the green room.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm awesome, dude. Listen, I want to say thank you so much for coming by.
Oh, no problem.
Because I don't know whether I don't want to fan geek out on you, but
okay.
Even before I started doing amateur stand up, even before I was into comedy, really, you were my favorite fucking comic.
Oh, well, thank you.
No joke.
How did you come across my career in the early, I guess, 2000s?
I think that it was, if not, it was the first memorable thing for you was The Nasty Show. I saw you on The Nasty Show.
That was, I think there's 2007.
Yeah.
At Just for Laughs. Were you at, Just for Laughs?
I saw it on
television.
On TV.
Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah.
That was cool. That not only for the chance, because I'd been auditioning for that festival off and on for almost 10 years.
As are most comics in Canada.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, it's very true. We're kind of, you know, what is it, last to know, first to go at the festival kind of thing. So they always know that they have a talent pool to pull from here. There's always great comics coming out of here and stuff like that. So that was a very cool thing. Not only my chance to perform at the festival, but on that show and having Nick DiPaolo, you know, Otto and George, Joe DeRosa, Chris Neff, Patrice O'Neill. I don't know if I'm missing anybody, just assassins, and having a chance to work with Otto and George. I don't know if you're familiar with...
It's the marionette.
Yes, yeah. The puppet, for sure, who was in Aristocrats, Paul Provenza's movie.
Dave Hudson was the guy who kind of...
That piece of shit.
put me in touch with you.
Yeah.
You've known him for a long time, right? Like, you guys...
I've known Dave. We hit it off... I think right out of the gate, he'd moved to, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, he'd moved to Toronto, and I think we ran into each other it must have been in Toronto, and we ended up going to doing a summer program at Humber for writing and performing, and we just kind of bonded over that, and he's been my buddy ever since. So since 2000, I guess? Yeah, wow. 2000, 99 or 2000, I think.
Do you have
been my pal, yeah.
Any dirt on that guy? Like,
no.
Anything?
No. It all come out.
You've known him all that, but he's so squeaky clean. Just well, the rosy cheeks.
A lot of people, he's got a whole toolbox full of Bill Cosby sweaters under his bed that he's ashamed of. He won't wear them anymore around me. But no, Dave's just an all-around great kind of Canadian dude. You know, yeah. He's just, you know, probably got some perverted... You know, his wife probably has to piss on him in the morning and get him out of bed. It's something simple like that.
Or a secret bookcase that slides apart and then there's like
dungeon.
A wall of TV screens. Yeah, dungeon.
Dungeon, yeah. Laxatives, and just leather masks as far as the eyes can see. Lobster bibs and butt plugs, which is a name of his one-man show that's coming out this fall.
Oh, really? Yeah, yeah.
Leather masks and butt plugs and lobster bibs.
He said to me one time that every time you guys went out... He'd turn around and you were taking a shit somewhere.
I take shits outside a lot. I'm a naturalist. And I use fig leaves and the open countryside to have my dumps. I don't know what's wrong with me. Sometimes. And I find that maybe I think it's something that I do maybe when I'm unstimulated. And unentertained and bored.
You need to create that.
I need to create some sort of chaos. It's not even attention directed to me. I just want to change the lane or something. And I find shitting on the ground in public places will really kind of... It's a conversation starter.
Where's the weirdest place you've shit? Seriously.
Oh, what was her name? Jeez.
Must have been in Germany.
No, nope. There's not a weird... I don't find... where is the weirdest place? Oh, on my buddy's wrist by accident.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you apologize for that or you just move on and pretend it never happened?
You laugh as hard as you can and point at him.
Okay.
And go, look, you have my shit on your wrist. Yeah, I just I just fuck around with poo, I guess. I don't know. I'm the log father online.
That was the log father?
The log father. No, I did set up... do you know FetLife? It's a fetish website. I set up my profile there but no one's poking around. I put all my name, you know, there's no aliases. My face is there, and you can click on the things that you want. And what you don't want, it's like your profile kind of goes, it outsources those kind of people. But all I get is gay clown's name, Rick. They keep coming in to want to shit on me.
They're the only ones who are into the same shit you're into. That's terrible.
No one's hitting me up. No one's hitting me up on FetLife.
That's unfortunate.
But that's a site where you can find shit eaters. I don't know. I've never eaten it. And I've had a girl drink my piss in Kingston, actually.
Really? In Kingston, Ontario?
Yeah. You know that rock shop on the main strip that goes down to the Howard Johnson?
Yes.
On the left-hand side, about three-quarters of the way down on that street, I don't even know. There's a rock kind of hippie shop.
Yeah, anyway, it's not there anymore. But yeah,
this is some time ago, and I was with a couple other comics, and I'd been in there looking at some rock shirts and stuff, and I saw a young lady behind the... not very attractive.
Chest tattoo?
No, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, built like kind of like Louis Anderson. See, think of Dave Hudson with a ponytail, but yeah. Smaller tits.
Yeah, I know the one, chest tattoo.
And but I've been peeing in bottles the whole tour and throwing them in the hotel rooms or put them on the back of their neck when they're driving it. I think they're tired. I go, oh, you could use hot toddy or something, right? And just rub a Gatorade bottle full of daddy's freshly squirted right on there. So.
Mm-mm.
I don't know what we're talking about now. I've lost my train of thought. Piss.
When you got pissed on in Kingston and your fetishes.
Oh, yeah. I peed in the bottle. And, anyway, I invited the girl from the rock shop. She ends up showing up on a date. She's a lesbian. And with another young lady. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I never really, you know, come and hang out. It's all cool. There was no, like, if you don't fuck me, I'll kill you. And I do think about that sometimes. So she shows up. I'm like, cool, we're all hanging out having drinks in the hotel room. And it said, who wants to drink some piss? And anyway, I brought the bottle in. And then she asked me if I had anything, maybe an incurable disease or something. And then pounded the piss. And then called me in my hotel room after she left, like an hour and a half later, and says, listen, I drank your piss. I think I should fuck you too. And she came over, but she was kind of hippie. Her beaver was out of control.
Oh, no.
It looked like a piss-soaked horsetail
coming
at me. I had to run a comb through it just to get the, what are those boll weevils? Those things that get collies get them when they run through the fields.
Burr.
Burr, yeah, like a burr. She had those. I guess she'd been hiking without any underwear on. And she picked up a bunch of boll weevils and burrs and stuff.
And let me guess, an excess of labia majora.
I couldn't see anything. Like I said, it was about 4 feet of hair.
Well, you didn't get deep in? You didn't?
I went in, but there was no... I couldn't find the edge of anything. I just, you know... And then I got so frustrated, I started cutting my own hole in the back of her leg so I could come.
It's like a black
hole. Are we recording?
Yeah,
we're recording.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we're on tape. It's on record.
Fantastic.
That you cut a hole.
Thank you, piss drinker. I appreciate it.
I don't know if that was the same tour that I saw you for the first time on the Nasty Show, but then saw you live when you came to Kingston one time, Time to Laugh Comedy Club,
yeah.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
And we had a kind of a stern upper middle management type from our office place. It was a work outing, but she came.
Oh, you had come with your company.
Oh, yeah.
That's always a disaster. Never go party with your boss. It's no fun.
We didn't know she was going to come, but she did, you know, because she wanted to be rah-rah, I'm the cool boss.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And
was she an older woman?
No, she was kind of our age, which made it fun, but she was an older woman on the inside,
yes.
You know?
It's like, called dead.
Yeah, because that's how she climbed management so quickly.
Okay.
And, so she was sitting on the outside corner, and we were rather close to the front row, and you paid her some attention.
Uh-huh.
Like, I believe you looked at her when you said you were going to bury her body out in the woods or something.
Okay, that happens, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was, I think you got nude at the end of the show.
There's been known to be some nudity.
And you came very close to brushing her face or her nose.
Yeah, I actually got told, I remember Mark Breslin, because I'd laid on some female cops lap naked at the Toronto Club and said, there's nothing you can do because I'm an artist and you're in my name, you know.
Yeah.
And Mark, I guess they'd maybe send a warning shot or something. And Mark says, you can't touch people naked. I go, but I can be naked. He goes, yes, but no touching. He goes, that's sexual assault.
I love the key message you got out of that was, so I can be naked?
Yeah, well, I don't want to limit myself to anything that might be in the moment. And sometimes it goes to a very invasive, naked lunatic if we get there on a good night.
You go to that place.
If it's a great show if I'm naked at the end on the tables. But I don't do that any. Everybody thinks so PC now that the repercussions from public nudity could be completely blown out of proportion. There's enough naked pictures of me on the internet.
So you've cut it?
I don't really do it. Yeah, no. It's not. It's nothing. Plus, now you know, being in Los Angeles now, you're limited to 5 to 10 minute showcases. So there's not a lot of time to build characters. It's too much of a sprint to get to. That not impossible, but it's not my goal. You know,
you started in Hamilton.
I started in Vancouver.
You're from Hamilton, but you started in Vancouver. But you're a very international comic, right? Like you're in LA now. That's your home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what's it like in LA? I've been to San Francisco, but I went with a family trip and I couldn't, get out to
San Francisco. Very nice, and it's San Francisco to every major city has its own kind of identity. Edmonton's very different from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm purely there for the blood. I'm not there. I'm not looking to start a family or settle down in Hollywood to do any of that. It's all business for me there. It's cool. It's very cool, but it's all work. And, so I only do things that are 99.9% of my life is geared to performing and everything aspects of that come after the live aspect is, the business and the smooths and network, talking to people, setting up shows. But, it goes on and on. I have a very busy day. I sleep for 6 hours. I get up, I have my morning shake. And do exercise, and then I'm on my computer or I'm moving my legs in a direction that's going to get me to where I want to be.
So what's the ultimate goal and where do you want to be?
Male prostitute.
Yeah. I'm sure you would have gotten there in Hollywood by now.
Well, I'm going to New York actually on the 12th to start prepping for Tonight Show showcases. I'm looking to do possibly a performance on a Tonight Show. So I'm
amazing.
Going to New York. Los Angeles is not really a place to build a showcase set.
Mm.
That's a place where you bring finished shit. New York is the other place, where you make cool shit. And you bring the cool shit to the sunshine place and you try and sell it in the market.
I see. New York's the petri dish. LA's the lab.
Yeah, totally, totally. Oh, it's full, and that's the thing. They're not creative types for the most part in LA because you got the directors, the right, all the people behind the creative people. But because they're there, we're drawn to that place, and the weather's great, and fucking, it's cool, And you find yourself. Who was I just talking to? Somebody in music. Oh, my friend's the sound guy for Danko Jones.
Nice.
Corey. And we're sitting at the Bovine a couple nights ago going, isn't this fucking business weird? He's like, just the other day I was with blah, blah, blah. And I go, I know. I was in Finland, doing gigs. And now I'm sitting in a green room smoking a joint with Ronnie James Dio. You know what I mean? And to go to find yourself in these, I don't know, maybe it's the kind of humble aspect of being a Canadian, we just kind of run with no arms because we know it's not leading to us having a big Canadian film or on a hit talk on a hit talk show. So it's just pure joy and ambition to be good. So when the rest of the world acknowledges our hard work and stuff, it's like, oh, this is fucking cool. So finding yourself in foreign countries doing cool shit with rad people is always very enlightening.
Finland. You for a time, or do you still do like big metal shows over in Scandinavia? Like, you open up for metal acts, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've done some fucking, like, first, never been done for, like, ever shit. When I lived in England for 5 years, and because all the countries are very close. And when I started in Vancouver in 96, even before I did my first live stand-up show, a lot of my friends were in bands. When I started hanging out in that scene in Vancouver, a lot of my friends were in these very extreme bands and stuff. And I was like, do I want to get into music or I want to get into comedy? That was kind of something I was like, I don't know anything about it. Some of my friends are involved. And then after being in those social circles, realizing that depending on other people, having a band is very difficult. You know, other guys get married or blah, 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 and this and that. I don't want to be in a band anymore. Fuck you, fuck you. I didn't want any of that. So
comedy, there's one creative vision. It's in your head.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm a bit of a control freak that way anyway. So it was a natural thing that I did. When I done it, it was very clear, and I was very, okay, yes, yeah, I can work in this realm. You know, this is something, late nights, you know, doing cool shit in that context. So a lot of the rock aspect of things that were already in place kind of crossed over to that. So when I went to Europe and started doing, you know, I think my first rock festival was Glastonbury Festival.
That's like one of the biggest ones in the UK.
Yeah, luckily through Canadians abroad, you know, my fucking brothers fleeing from healthcare in Canada, you know, hooked me up with stuff. You know, they really went to bat for me. And, you know, guys like Craig Campbell and Glenn Wohl and Sean Collins and Tom State, all these brilliant Canadians that were. And I think I kind of made the cut as the last guy. You know, Wilmont, I think we were with the same, Mike Wilmont and I, yeah, with the same management company for quite some time. And so they're like, oh, I did this rock festival, but it was very hippie. I think if I remember correctly, it didn't go very well. But being I never fucking camping at a festival with 130,000 people or something like that, maybe even more now. And doing those shows, I'm like, oh, they're standing in the mud at 2 a.m, drinking, drugged, eating bad food, and there to see comedy. I'd never seen anything like it. Seeing Stuart Lee in a tent with a few thousand kids, and you could hear a pin, like they were so attentive in muddy boots and just haven't showered in days watching. I never seen anything like that. Try and sell that in North America. People tell you to go fuck yourself.
Yeah. People just ready to laugh.
Yeah. Come out. They were treated it like the main stage bands. You know, there'd be an extra 1,000+ people standing on the outskirts of the tent, listening, watching comedy. I was blown away. So when I started doing gigs in Scandinavia and stuff like that, I always really enjoyed European metal in general, and then started through hanging out in those music circles, which were very comfortable for me. I started to get invited to do various rock festivals like Sonosphere and Download and Bloodstock. But I got to go on in between, like, it would be Unleashed, me, and then Mayhem, you know, Norwegian black metal band after me, and having just as much as a response for that. So word of mouth, you know, I was the guy. I reached out to all the different festivals and said, look, I'm an anomaly. You can see my resume. Like, you can look up my jasonrouse.com. You look at posters, you'll see all the lineups, all the bands and all that stuff. So those shows were awesome. Yeah, in a roundabout way of answering your question.
They must have been, like, crazy, though. Like, I mean, I imagine the scene behind the scene of those kind of festivals and tours can't be all that normal either, though. Like, what's it like backstage at some of that?
Sometimes it's like, it's super boring, you know, because
it's an industry like any other. There's a lot of hurry up and wait, but I'm sure the after parties are a bit different.
Yeah, they can be, you know. Some guys, you know, younger bands will be a little more rambunctious and, you know, just running because they've never been in the situation. But you'll get to bands that have been around and know that they have to pace themselves and they're doing yoga and eating organic food and, you know, to keep, because they've got 200 shows.
Right.
Yeah, there's some crazy shit. It's mostly me.
I was going to say, you, that's probably your best audience for taking a shit around the corner.
No, I don't know. No, because that's, they've seen all that shit when Gigi Allen came around, I guess. Yeah, it can be. It's mostly personalities. There's not no so much craziness going on. It's just like, what a weird collective of people, actors and like movies people, and in Scandinavia, my God, the women that go to metal shows there, buddy.
Smoke shows, yes.
Like Yorkville.
I find Scandinavian women generally are just gorgeous.
Dude, it's crazy. It's sad. And I mean it in the sense that, like, they're just genetically gorgeous. And but a lot of, because it's everybody looks great for the most part, that they don't have the defensiveness on it, because everybody's fuckable. Yeah. So opposed to like a hot chick hanging out on a construction site, she's gonna hang herself. She's gonna be harassed with dicks all day.
But but over there, it's like, oh well, yeah, I saw next. Three of those on the way to work today.
Yeah, yeah. I went into a subway at Gamlestaden in Stockholm, right near Old Town, and there was three girls. They looked like triplet porn stars with no makeup on and aprons. They were smoking. I go, in America, you girls, and you see them on bicycles. You go, you'd never see a girl that hot on a bicycle.
Yeah, she'd, you're too pretty to ride a bicycle.
Yeah. She'd have a boyfriend who was rich.
Or a chauffeur.
Yeah, there's no way. So.
And so friends come over and visit me here, because Young and Eglinton in Toronto, and they remark on the hotness level of the women in this neighborhood.
Yeah, because they're not stuck-up cunts like they are in the downtown core.
Well, they're a different type of stuff. I mean, some of the, you know, power suit types.
I'll take them. I've dated a lot of those fucking bitches. You know, they get cigarettes put on their face when you fuck them.
I'm telling you, a lot of them, you know, like, yeah.
Well, it's the, you know.
They're kinkier than people give them credit for.
Yeah. That's the thing. I'm not the problem. I'm the fucking answer.
Yeah. So I pull up. I have to cross Young every day on Eglinton to get home in my car. Mm-hmm. And I got stopped at the stoplights there, and I watch people go from the subway station over to the Young and Egg Center, just going north on Young.
Above ground commuters.
It's ridiculous. The hotness level of the people just at that one crosswalk. It's off the chart.
Business, right? You got to be professional, but you got to sling a little dick at the same time. You know what I mean? You know, that's why the girl's got a fucking $4,000 handbag.
Yeah. So back in LA, who do you run with? Who's your, like, because I know, at least from my limited experience of comedy, from some of the gang I hung with in Hamilton and the people I'm experiencing or getting to know a bit in Barrie and in Kingston, there's kind of like a little crowd of a posse. Do you have a crowd like that?
Canadians again. It really is. It sounds, it's Tom Green, Harlan Williams, Russell Peters, nice. Jeremy Hotz, my buddy Michael Gelbart, those are the guys. I kind of do a lot of my own stuff, but like when I'm hanging out at the clubs, there's usually a click at the Comedy Store, there's a click at the Improv, and there's a click at the Laugh Factory. So those are the only places I really go, and I've got a pretty good rapport, not only with the clubs, but the people who frequent them, the locals. So I'm kind of like
just weave around, yeah?
Yeah, I do my own thing, you know. I'm not...
Do you ever meet Nikki Glaser by chance?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right, so she has this show.
She's great.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the show.
My fiance loves it.
Yeah.
Has it on all the time.
She's fucking assassin.
Yeah. And so anyways, I'm making dinner the other night, and she's got it on in the background. And I do like a little comedy set. I don't even like to refer to myself as a comedian, maybe a wannabe or whatever. I hear one of my own, I don't want to say one of my own jokes, one of my own references being done by Nikki Glaser.
Sure.
I did not take it from her, I swear to God. But what do I do now? I'm having a crisis of faith.
Joke.
Write a new joke. Thank you. That's
write a joke. I don't know why we're having this conversation.
Okay, good.
What are you going to do? Take this fucking four words to your grave and go, I was the first. Who gives a fuck?
All right. Good, because that was my immediate impulse as well. I got to throw,
and then
that,
you're, if you
throw
don't,
that in the fucking trash.
Then
now.
You're in these guys, and regardless, just fuck it. Can you create anything else?
Yeah.
Or you fucked?
Well,
don't be lazy.
Okay, I won't be lazy. I'll keep working on it then. I'm always writing, but I never.
Yeah, well, write it and make it work. Write a new joke.
Okay.
Fuck it. That's
professional advice.
Fuck it.
Does that happen often, or is that like, it must be, because I know in music, it's often I hear a riff on a new band that's out, and I'm like, yeah, that's a U2 riff from 87.
Totally. You know? And that's what, and every time you hear that other song, you're going to think of U2 in 87. So do you want to be U2 in 87, or do you want to be, do you want to have your, you want to be U2.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't. I want to be Slayer.
Yes, you do. Yeah. So maybe it was a wrong reference.
But yeah, shoot for the top. Don't get caught up in other people's cobwebs of nonsense.
TIFF is on right now. Do you check out TIFF at all? You're in Toronto. Why not?
I'm actually going to see a movie with Mark Breslin today.
Oh, cool.
We're going to go see, it's called Hell Something Another. It's a documentary about Yorkville, the hipster movement in Yorkville in the 50s, 50s and 60s.
Sounds like the Beatniks.
Yeah. Yeah, the original. So I've been very curious because I know that Yuck Yucks opened, when it was in the church, and then they had the big club. The first real Yucks, I think, was in Yorkville under the old office on Bay Street for a long time. So, and that was like the cool hit place. Oh, Yorkville. We used to go down to the Pilot Rest, but that was the spot. And this, I go, I don't fucking, this place is fucking shit now. I don't see any of that bohemian kind of lifestyle. So I'm curious on what it's like. And I think Queen Street is going to be a newer Yorkville in that sense. It's contagious. Big business is swallowing up
the downside
all my friends' stores.
Of gentrification.
But we're dead. We're dead soon.
Anyways.
Fingers crossed.
Well, you're hoping for apocalypse?
Oh, something. No, not necessarily. Time moves on, and you can either contribute and be a part of it, or you can be the asshole on the horse pointing at the first motor car going, it'll never catch on. So it's you're not supposed to like Justin Bieber, in your 30s, unless you're a pedophile or Dave Hudson.
Jason Rouse is in the green room. His podcast is called Safe Word.
That's Jason Rouse's Safe Word on iTunes.
Yeah. And you're also at Yucks. It's like a month, 2 months?
Yeah, I just finished my week in Toronto. I started in Vaughan. I've got Mississauga this coming weekend. And then I think Niagara Falls.
Ajax.
And then Ajax. I finish. And then New York. I go to New York. I'll be doing some shows in and around New York for October, November.
And then that aforementioned Tonight Show thing.
Do some showcases, start working on that material, man. I got to start from scratch and build a whole new set that will be even looked at.
Yeah.
I have quite a, some baggage, some stigma. So, reintroduce myself.
Well, good luck, man, because I got to go write a new set too.
Yeah, write a new set.
Yeah, I should.
Cool.
And thanks for popping by, man. It's been awesome. Anything else you want to plug while you're here?
Yeah, check out all my social media. My Instagram is JasonRouse666. My Twitter is JasonRouse666. My Facebook page is JasonRouse666.
It's very easy to remember.
Yeah. I don't want any mix up with the Jason667, so I wanted to make sure I was right. And JasonRouse.com, come to my shows or go fuck yourself.
I'm just going to hit this button over here.
Yeah, start that again.
Yeah, that's right. We'll fire up our volcano vaporizer from our friends at 420 Canada, 420 Kingston. It's the, I find it's like the Volkswagen of getting high machines.
Yeah.
It's like the stainless steel beauty.
It is. It's built like a tank. And send me some stuff, Kingston. What are they called?
Oh, 420 Kingston, yeah.
420 Kingston. Get in touch with me. Give me something. I'm regular. I'm a regular guy.
Regular dude. We'll be right back.
What happens when we play outside? We become healthier, both mentally and physically. We become more creative and more focused. We connect with nature, each other, and ourselves. Let's Take This Outside, a new podcast hosted by me, Marianne Iveson, an aspiring outdoor athlete and nature lover. I speak to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about their connection to nature, how it affects their performance and everyday life. Let's Take This Outside, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and at letstakethisoutside.ca.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.